Before we get started today, I wanted to talk about my favorite prenatal supplement. It's by Needed. Needed was created by two moms and nutritionists who knew women deserve better. Their products are third-party tested and support women before, during, and after pregnancy. And guess what? Even dads, too. Our community gets 20% off your first order with code VBAC, VBAC. At thisisneeded.com. If you are taking a prenatal already, that's okay. I encourage you to listen to episodes 109 and 406 as we talk with Needed's co-founder, Julie, about what you want in a prenatal and if you are finding that your prenatal is just not cutting it. Just like a provider, it's never too late to change. All right, women of strength, let's get into today's wonderful episode.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. We are so excited that you are here with us, and we have our friend Kari. Kari was raised in Huntsville, Alabama, and she's a stay-at-home mom with her two adorable girls. She will actually be having her daughter Mary on the show with us today. She is 7 weeks old as of recording, and Kristen is two. So there, she's just got lots going on over there. And she says when she's not in her postpartum stage, she loves running, she loves cooking from scratch and baking for friends. She had a VBAC, and her first C-section happened after an induced labor that just wasn't going in an ideal direction. And then she did lots of changes, did a lot of different things like hiring a doula, changing providers, getting a chiropractor, and ended up having a VBAC. And she still had some things come, some curveballs kind of thrown her way. She ended up developing preeclampsia later on in pregnancy and ended up being induced and having an assisted delivery. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about preeclampsia today in replace of our review. I kind of want to talk a little bit more of what it is. Like what is preeclampsia? And are there certain things we can do to try and help preeclampsia or not or avoid it? So according to the Preeclampsia Foundation, preeclampsia is pers as persistent high blood pressure that develops during pregnancy or the postpartum period. And official diagnosis of pre-E typically is made when the presence of high blood pressure, along with other complications like protein in the urine, very severe headaches, like decreased blood platelets, kidney or liver issues, or even fluid in the lungs. These things are all things that can happen with preeclampsia, and preeclampsia is serious. It's a serious matter, and it has its different severities, and so that is something to also keep in mind depending on the source. I'm going to have a blog here with all of this information, so if you want to go read more about it, I encourage you to. But depending on the source, we know that around 5 to 10% of births in the U.S. are affected by hypertension disorders, including preeclampsia rates, and they have actually increased by 25% over the last 20 years, which is pretty crazy. There are things that they are finding that are kind of related to or risk factors because of these certain things, like being over 35, having a family history, which Kari will talk about that, obesity, IVF pregnancy, chronic condition before, like diabetes or autoimmune disorders, being pregnant with multiples, like twins and more, that can also bring some of those chances in. So what are some things that you can do to prevent preeclampsia? Maintaining an adequate sodium intake, supplementing with things like vitamin C, vitamin D, choline. There's so many things like omega-3s. There's so many things that we can do within our own nutrition. And that's another thing that I wanted to bring up is the Brewer's diet. A lot of people suggest the Brewer's diet as something that can help. And, it's really focused on protein and vitamin-rich fruits and vegetables and really avoiding processed foods. And then maybe even talking to your provider about low-dose aspirin. And if you've had preeclampsia before, your provider may automatically put you on low-dose aspirin for your next pregnancy.
But I also wanted to talk a little bit about blood pressure and what it really means to have quote unquote high blood pressure, because that is what preeclampsia is. And according to, this is going to be right off of ACOG. I'm just reading right off of what ACOG says. It says the blood pressure reading that has two numbers separated by, sorry, this is going to talk about what blood pressure numbers mean. So blood pressure readings that have two numbers separated by a slash. So you're going to see a number and then a slash and then another number. And those two numbers mean separate things. So a blood pressure reading of 110 over or slash 80, for example, is referred to 110 over 80. That's how you say it. The first number of the pressure is against the artery walls when the heart contracts. This is called the systolic blood pressure. The second number is the pressure against the artery walls when the heart relaxes and between the contraction, and that is called diastolic. I could never say that. Diastolic blood pressure. So there are different numbers all over the place, and some people have lower blood pressure, but when we have preeclampsia and hypertension issues, that is typically a higher number. So an elevated systolic between is 120 to 129, and the diastolic less than 80. So hypertension, stage one hypertension is like 130 and 139 or 80 to 89. Stage two is 140 and a diastolic 90. So when we're starting to see 140 over 90 or getting up there, we have providers that their alarms are going off just a little bit. So we're going to be paying attention to that. Now, I have had a provider tell me that even the 140 is something to, be a high alert on, but when that diastolic number is higher, like getting into the 100s, 110 or higher, or we're getting into that systolic, like 150s to 160s, there's definitely reason to reconsider what the plan of action for birth is. Now, if you Google quickly, can I have a vaginal birth or can I have a VBAC, vaginal birth after cesarean with preeclampsia? I was quite shocked to see how many quick little blurbs came up within the AI and responsive saying, really, no. But that's not necessarily the case. And it does depend on how severe the preeclampsia is. If it's very severe, it could be causing too much stress or harm on the mom and baby. So it might be something to, reconsider or reevaluate. But it is still very possible to be induced or to have a vaginal birth just in general or a vaginal birth after cesarean with preeclampsia. So there's some information. I'm going to get some links for you for our blog. Maybe dive a little bit deeper into, how do I navigate preeclampsia diagnosis? Can I VBAC with preeclampsia? And what does that look like? Can I prevent it? Which we just talked a little bit about, and it's got some more of those studies and links. So dive into our show notes today if you have, more questions and want to research more about preeclampsia and hypertension numbers and what that looks like. But we do have our friend Kari today who did have preeclampsia, was induced, and did have a vaginal birth. So it is possible, and we do have other podcasts on the or stories on the podcast. So if you want to continue listening to more stories like Kari's, then you can also check out the vbaclink.com and search preeclampsia at VBAC with preeclampsia, and you will find quite a few. So, all right, we're gonna get into the intro and then we're gonna turn the time over to Kari.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. All right, everybody. We have our friend Kari from Alabama, as I mentioned, and we are really excited to hear her story. She's also joining us with her little baby. How old is your baby?
He is, what's today? Tuesday, almost 7 weeks.
7 weeks. Oh my gosh, so cute and tiny. Well, welcome to the show. We just were chatting a little bit before, and I was telling her how I really kind of want to talk about her first C-section a little bit more, maybe, because it has to do, well, it doesn't have to do, but it has a whole feature in the reason for a C-section potentially was induction and the RISE trial. So can you talk to me a little bit more or tell us a little bit more about how your provider talked to you about that or introduced that topic to you?
So, you know, I had a totally uncomplicated pregnancy. Everything went totally fine, except for at the end, you get uncomfortable and, you know, you don't love being pregnant anymore so much. So I think my writer probably kind of picked up on that. And I had told her previously that we wanted a big family. So basically, I had thought about going on medicated, but had made no plan.
So she was kind of feeling that you were like, she was reading that you're like, oh, I'm uncomfortable, which we all are. And she's like, hey, there's this ARRIVE trial. Like, did she introduce it that way? Like, oh, could induce?
She said that she likes to induce a lot, which now knowing more about her is not shocking. But I told her that basically I did not care how the birth went, except I didn't want a C-section. And she basically told me that my best chance of not having a C-section was to be induced at 39 weeks.
Really? Your best chance. So interesting. So at this point of this pregnancy, was the trial an active trial, or was it like they had finished the trial and she believes in the trial and encouraged that?
I think it's the latter.
Okay.
This was in early 2023.
Oh, so yeah, it had been done at this point.
Yeah, and I think by that point, some people maybe knew it wasn't the best, but of course I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hard because we do have providers preaching it.
Yep, and I've been going to her since I was in high school, so I just, whatever she said I was
Yeah, doing. You're like, cool, yeah, that sounds, well, and you're miserable and you're like ready to have a baby, so.
Yep.
It's great, yeah.
So, Well, before going in, which again, if I knew what I knew now, I wouldn't have done it, but I was not dilated at all. I was getting all the cervical checks because I was curious. They didn't push it. I was just curious. And I thought, why not? But I remember them being incredibly painful. I guess my cervix was probably really posterior because they had a really hard time getting to it. And they were miserable. And so this time around, I was like terrified to get cervical checks. No dilation. Not soft, nothing. Went in and I took like the pill. So is that the Cytotec? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can do it orally or vaginally. So Cytotec is the pill. Yep.
Yep. That's what I did. And it took two rounds of that and there was no cervical change for like over 24 hours. Like we stopped in the middle of it and she let me get Chick-fil-A. Like, it took a very long time, tons of cervical checks, you know, every few hours. They were all miserable because nothing's happening. So it's not a good time. And then basically as soon as there was enough cervical change for her, and I don't remember how far dilated I was, but it's basically as soon as she could get like the little ProHSJ hook up in there, she broke my water, which I knew she was going to do, but of course I just didn't know that was probably not one of those options.
Yeah. So you really weren't dilated much, maybe like 1 centimeter. Yeah, and she's like, let's, and not contracting at this point could have sent you home.
Well,
but maybe no, just,
I don't think I really was contracting. Or if I was, it was so mild because I like definitely there was like, I felt it after.
They broke my water, but at first I don't really remember there being contractions. So if they were very, very mild.
Yeah. So you like really didn't have any signs of labor previous to the water breaking.
Correct. And I think they started Pitocin like right before they broke my water. So like all in one go, they broke my water, started Pitocin, and it was a lot really quickly. I don't remember the timeline, but my husband said that he thinks I made it like a few hours before I got an epidural. And again, I have no idea how far along I was. For some reason in my mind, I think it was like 4 centimeters. So pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, if you knew what you knew now, I wouldn't. But
right. I mean, we say that, right? And it's sometimes I feel like, in fact, you had said this in your form that you filled out, like the shame. Like I said, what's the secret lesson or something that no one really talks to you about? And it's like the shame. And I think it's because in a lot of ways we learn and then we're like, oh, we have this shame that like we didn't do something different, but like we can't shame ourselves. We have to just be confident and know we made the decision that we made with the information that we had. And that's okay. Like we do not need to shame ourselves for having an outcome, even if it wasn't the one we wanted. And even, yes, if we find out we could have done stuff, like, we can't shame ourselves.
Still hard not to, you know.
It's so, yeah. Okay, so she breaks your water. You get an epidural.
Mm-hmm. And then I remember we, like, slept that night. Somebody did come in and, like, do some different things with the peanut ball with me. And then I did continue to dilate. Not quickly, but I did. And then eventually I got to 9.5 centimeters and then it like stopped. It wasn't, I don't think it was a particularly long time, but it was a few hours, you know, maybe only two. It really wasn't that long, I feel like. But in that time period, my epidural stopped working, not completely. But I was feeling contractions, definitely not totally, but I was feeling contractions. I was having some serious back labor. I know now, I didn't know then. And then like a hot spot in one of my hips, which I still don't really know what that is. But that did not come and go with contractions. It was just like a constant excruciating pain.
I wonder if the baby was maybe like posterior, but like also asymmetric and hanging out in that hip. Like asymmetrical.
That's what I was wondering too.
Yeah.
Because she was posterior, which of course nobody told me. Nobody said anything about that. I found that out in my like op notes. So I wouldn't have known what to do with it anyways, even if somebody had told me, I guess. So what? So then while my epidural was, you know, not working, they came in and told me that we could wait like they could wait like one more hour and then we would go talk about a C-section. But I was in so much pain, they left, and I talked to my husband. I was like, I can't, like, let's do it now. And so I asked for the C-section, which is another part of that shame, honestly, is, like, nobody made that call for me. I mean, they probably would have eventually, but they didn't initially. Like, I asked for it.
Yeah, well, you were in that situation where you were vulnerable, you were in pain. Doesn't sound like there was a ton of help all around. Just other than, we'll leave you here for a little bit, we'll come back, but we're probably going to talk about this. So in your mind, it's like, well, I'm already not doing well here. And I truly do believe that mentally, like, we need to be okay in our labor. Because if we are not doing well and you're suffering, right? Because I do believe there is a point in labor that someone can be feeling that suffering feeling. Labor shouldn't be suffering. Then it's not going to help us postpartum either, mentally or physically.
Yeah. And I didn't think, I didn't know last time that like they could redose it or like change things. Nobody offered that in any way last time, which in my second birth, like that is part of it. And they were helpful. But the first time around, they like nobody offered that. And I just didn't know that was even an option. So I find that frustrating also, but Yeah. So then I did go back for a C-section. It was, you know, pretty quick, but we weren't rushed, obviously. It went totally fine. I don't consider my C-section traumatic, which I think I'm really lucky for, because it was fine. I wasn't, like, I had listened to enough. I listened to the birth hour the first time around. So like, I listened to the C-section story. So like, I knew ish what to expect. So it wasn't terrible. I think it was more traumatic for my husband because he had no idea what to expect because, you know, he wasn't allowed in for the epidural, and he walked in and I'm just like strapped down to the table, and they've already started cutting me open, and just that's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes we don't really think about what our birth partners go through and how they internalize what they see, what they hear. I know I didn't.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. Until we were talking about a VBAC, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't get skin to skin, or, you know, they brought her over all swaddled up and like I got like cheek to cheek, and I think in the moment I wasn't bummed about it, but now looking back, I find that really, really sad. But, you know, the C-section was fine. I healed really well from my C-section. I had no issues with that. We breastfed for a long time, which I think partially because I had no idea that that can be a struggle after a C-section. I had no clue, so I just assumed everything would work, so it was fine. While they were sewing me up, like from the C-section, I asked if I could have a VBAC next time, which I didn't know that it was like so much of a thing. I had just heard the term VBAC and that it was a possibility, and I was like, okay, great, well, we'll do that next time. Mm-hmm. And my provider said that I was probably not a good candidate and my pelvis was probably just too small.
Oh gosh. Yes. Yeah. Common, so common.
Yeah. So that was on my op notes, the CPD diagnosis, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. luckily my next provider like did not care about. So thank goodness. Mm-hmm. So I found that sad, but I just took her word for it. And so for the first several months, that was my assumption, was just like, okay, we're just gonna have C-sections, like, mm-hmm. and she did also tell me, like, you can have tons of C-sections. She said she'd done 8 on somebody, and I was
golly.
Which now, of course, then I was like, oh, great.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, ugh. That's, yeah. Come to find out.
It's actually not something to brag about, but all right.
Like, come to find out, this provider has a very high C-section rate. I have heard like 60%, which seems nuts, but I've heard that from more than one person.
Wow.
So I don't, yeah. And again, I just had no idea. The only person that I knew that had delivered with her had had 2 unmedicated deliveries. So I just thought, sure, we're fine. Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Women of Strength, I want to talk about one of the companies we wholeheartedly love and feel you should know about. It's a company called Needed. Needed was created by 2 mothers and trained nutritionists who knew there had to be a better way when it comes to women's health. When I found out about Needed, I was immediately inspired by their passion and drive to help women all over. They've developed high-quality supplements that support women before, during, and after pregnancy. And they didn't just stop there. They have also created products designed to support dads and kids because the whole family's health matters. The women behind Needed are truly change makers. They've brought together a collective of over 10,000 practitioners who work with them on everything from education to product development, and they've set a radically better standard for women's health. We are so grateful for the work they are doing. And here's the best part. Our amazing community gets 20% off your first order. Just use the code VBAC at checkout when you head over to thisisneeded.com. Again, that is code VBAC, VBAC, for 20% off your first order at thisisneeded.com. We love Needed so much, and we know you will too.
So, like I said, I just assumed we would have more C-sections, and I was sad about it, But like, just, I just assumed that was just my fate, right? And I don't know what made me start looking into VBAC. I don't remember what it was, but well, you know, it might have been my husband, because he, like, from like right after having a C-section, he was like, well, yeah, you can just have a VBAC next time, it's natural. And I was like, I mean, you're right, but this doctor said. So yeah, he was like all on board.
Yes, I love that. That's not always the case. It's more rare to be the case.
I know. I'm really lucky about that. Yeah, yeah. That like he was more on board than I was initially. So you guys are actually the reason that I ended up like going for a VBAC.
Really?
Yes, because I was like, we're going to have C-sections. Plus, I already know it. You know what I mean? It wasn't the scary option. And I think I just typed a VBAC into Spotify and you guys came up. And I started at the beginning and then I was like, oh, we're doing this.
You're like, all right, this is possible.
Yeah. So that was when my daughter was like 6 months old, my oldest. So I started looking for providers basically immediately before I was pregnant. And I knew from this podcast, I knew I wanted a midwife and not an OB. But in Alabama, you can't have a home birth after a C-section. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for hospital midwives. And I met with two, loved the second one, and that's who I went with. And she's awesome. So I can say who she is, right? Okay, Samantha Wall at Women for Women. But I've heard that all of the midwives are great. And surprise ending, but an OB technically delivered my daughter. So the OBs there are also VBAC friendly.
Yeah, that's very good to know. Women to Women.
Women for Women.
Oh, Women for Women. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Great practice, Huntsville, Alabama. Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
Yep. So I like got established with her and I got pregnant 3 months later.
So you were, okay, wait, how far were you when you got pregnant?
I got pregnant with my daughter, like right after my daughter turned a year. So they're 21 months apart, almost exactly.
Hey, okay. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I will say when I met with Sam, she did suggest like the 18 month birth to birth. But I will say I also kind of pushed, even though I was already past that point, like I was past that 9 months, mm-hmm. but I was like, but is that a necessity? And she's like, no, but it's preferred.
Yes.
So, but.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So fully intended to have a VBAC from the beginning. I hired a doula super early on. Rocket City Doulas is who it's through. I ended up with Megan and she is phenomenal. She also does the hypno babies in Huntsville, which we didn't end up using, but I know a lot of people do. So this pregnancy was like a little bit more complicated, but it still wasn't, all in all, it's still pretty, pretty chill. I get really nauseous at the beginning. So that was true the second time around too. Found out we were having another girl. At the anatomy scan, they found, which I'm pretty sure I forgot to tell you about this part, they found a velamentous cord insertion.
Yeah, BC.
Which didn't really end up being an issue at all, but I mean, I know it can be. Basically, for me, she just told me not to travel after the third trimester, and I just had a few extra ultrasounds to make sure the baby was getting big enough, because I think IUGR can result from that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did not have that issue. She was bigger than my first daughter, so totally fine there. Yeah, so that ended up fine. This time we took a Christian childbirth course in the area. The first time, which I forgot to say, we took the childbirth course through the hospital, which I don't want to name drop because one of them was bad. But there were like two hospitals in the area. We delivered at a different hospital the second time. And I don't know the childbirth classes through the second hospital might be better, but through the first one, they were basically useless. Totally. Like, I did not learn anything that I didn't know. And even my husband was like, why are we taking this?
Darn it. Yeah.
So, but it's okay. The Christian childbirth courses we took were phenomenal, so helpful. And my husband, who, like, when we hired a doula, he was like, I'm not sure. He wasn't, like, totally sure about it, but he did it because I felt it was really important. But after taking the course, he was like, I'm so glad we hired a doula. We need this. So that was great and very helpful. And I feel like it really set me up to know how to get through labor. Now, having gone through it, I felt really good about it. Something that I did not have like a lot of fun with during the pregnancy, I had at this practice, and I assume at a lot of them just because of the hospital policy, I had to meet with an OB at the practice because I was with a midwife to go over VBAC risks. And you have to sign a consent form, which one of them is from the hospital. And it annoyed me. And it was like it definitely was like scare tactic-y. And I was annoyed by it, but I was like, okay, just sign this stupid form so I can have my VBAC. I also had to sign one for the practice, but I will say that one was not as scare tactic-y. They put like actual statistics on there that like match like what you guys talk about. And they also had risks of C-section, like a repeat C-section on there. So I was like, okay, well, at least we're covering all our bases.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the only OB that I had met at the practice because I just kept seeing my midwife because I like my midwife. But that's, and this is, I feel like a God thing, but that is who ended up delivering my baby. The only OB that I'd met, that's who I ended up delivering her, which is really lovely.
Yeah, that is great.
But I will say, I cried at that appointment because, you know, they even though I, from this podcast, even though I already knew all of the risks and they weren't telling me any new information, there is something about them saying it all out loud to you back to back. Because in the worst case scenario, it is scary. And I'm lucky that basically none of that happened, but I understood that it was a possibility and it was a lot and I cried and it was not fun. But not the end of the world. Other than that, my daughter did we only knew this because of the extra ultrasounds that I was getting. So, well, I say that. My midwife also did like some belly mapping and would like tell me like where she was, which my OB last time didn't do anything like that. So I just knew she was head down at 20 weeks. She was head down at like 36 and that's all I cared about. But yeah, so because of the extra ultrasounds and the belly mapping, I knew Mary was flipping like between breech and head down. And of course, as like going for a VBAC, I was terrified. Because I think with the velamentous cord insertion, I don't know that they would have offered to do an ECV. We never got to that point, so I don't know that for sure, but I just had a hunch. That terrified me. And I like it made me realize that I was the most scared of not even like getting to try. I cried so much, even at the possibility of her being breech. While she was like doing her flipping, I found a chiropractor. Who is Dr. C at Max Health, who's also phenomenal. Oh, she is the sweetest little lady. She's tiny and adorable, and I love her. I do not think it is a coincidence. Like, the first week, I think I went in twice that week. At the end of that week, I felt her flip. Like, I felt it, and it hurt, and never again. And then at that next appointment, she was head down, and that was it.
Yeah. That's so awesome. Do not
think it was a coincidence.
Good.
Yeah. So I will always go to a chiropractor while I'm pregnant. Actually, I'll probably keep going while I'm not pregnant. Yeah. So after that she was, I had that last ultrasound at 34 weeks and I was like, I didn't have gestational diabetes. I was GBS negative. I just thought we were like in the clear. I was so excited. I was like, we are having this VBAC. I was so ready. And I will also say, because I was induced last time unnecessarily, I so, so badly wanted to go into labor naturally. I wanted that so bad. And I wanted an unmedicated birth, and I didn't want to be hooked up to any IVs, and I wanted to be able to get in the shower. Like, I wanted all of the things, and as we will see, most of my birth plan, like, went out the window. And I think most of it was necessary, and it is what it is, but it's just not what I was expecting, right? I did have lots of swelling at the end, and my older sister had preeclampsia, which apparently it can be hereditary. So, like, and my midwife knew that. So, like, they were, you know, paying attention to everything. I was, like, the other thing is I was fully expecting to go to 42 weeks. I don't know why. I was fully expecting to go all the way to 42 weeks. And my little sister was getting married 2 days before my due date. So I was just, like, set. I was like, I'm going to make it to the wedding. It's going to be fine. And then we'll have a baby next week or the week after. Right. Of course not. So at my 39-week appointment, so this is like wedding week also, my blood pressure was high. And I wish I remembered the numbers, but I don't. But it was high enough that when they told me, it was like, oh, that sounds scary. And they, you know, like, have me, like, wait a minute and calm down, drink some water, and try it again. And it was the same thing. So then they had the midwife came in and talked to me, and I had not gotten any cervical checks because last time they were so terrible. So she was talking to me about, like, we're probably, like, she wanted to induce me the next day, which of course was not what I wanted to hear, right? That alone, like, terrified me. And so she wanted to, like, do a cervical exam just to see where we were at, just because obviously that would, like, play a part in how I would be induced. She did a cervical check, and we called my husband, and we talked about how he would induce, because of course, I was 39 weeks. I thought, I'm not in labor. This is fine. I went to this appointment alone. And of course, it would have been really nice to have had my husband at that appointment, but that's okay. And so I was 3 centimeters, like, at that appointment, which, I almost cried when she told me that. I was so happy. Yeah. Because last time it took so long for anything to happen. I just wasn't expecting. Oh, I was so happy. And so, but what that did mean was, like, I couldn't do a Foley because, like, there was no point at that point. So we talked about doing a Pitocin induction, which of course also I hated the idea of because I wanted to go unmedicated. I didn't want Pitocin, but after talking to her, that seemed like the best option, especially knowing that my sister had preeclampsia. And my sister's was not late onset, so it was, like, definitely scarier, and, like, she delivered really early, and there was NICU time, and, you know, I knew how scary it could be, and I was like, I don't want to push it and it get bad. So we went ahead with the induction. We did all the things that, well, I did get a sweep at that 39-week appointment because if I was already being induced, why not, right? So I got a sweep. You know, we went on a walk. I did the curb walking. We went and got Korean, and, like, I had all the spicy food. I did the mile circuit. I walked on the stairs. All the things. And I did have and I had already been having contractions that week, but nothing consistent. And nothing that I even, like, had to breathe through. And so, like, when we were at dinner that night, they picked up and they were kind of consistent, but of course once I got up and moved, and they just stopped. So I was really bummed when we woke up in the morning and I was not in labor. But we went in for the induction, and they did find protein in my urine that, like, the next day. So at least there I felt validated that, like, I definitely need to be here. You know what I mean? And I was 4 centimeters when we got there. So, you know, the changes were happening, but just not quickly. And I will say, I asked all the questions about, like, how we were doing the Pitocin, because, you know, you hear on the podcast, low and slow. And even like you guys talk about like what that means. And I was very scared that like it was not going to be slow enough for what I wanted, but it was. It was very low and very slow. And the hospital staff was awesome. And anytime that I wanted to like hold off on upping it, they didn't care. They were like, okay, we'll wait, which was lovely. And I was also like, I went there ready to like fight for myself and like be on guard. And they were not concerned. They're like, oh yeah, we do VBACs all the time.
Great.
So, that is so nice to hear. It was like a breath of fresh air. So then once it got ramped up, we tried a lot of like positions, and they brought out, they had like a stool and they had like a blow up thing that I could lean over the bed on, which is even hard to describe, but I think I did end up using it for a while. Actually, I got to a 5 and then I just kind of stalled, which was in the moment. I don't remember being frustrated, but now looking back, I'm like, oh, that wasn't very quick considering I came in at a 4. But my brain didn't think about that then, which is nice. So then at a certain point, we turned off the pitocin for a little bit, and we opted to break my water because she was already like pretty low. So we felt good about that. And that, of course, like kicked things up a notch. And once it got really rough, I really liked sitting backwards on the toilet. I thought that was great, which of course I heard about on this podcast. At a certain point, then I recognize it in the moment, but obviously not like fully formed thoughts. I could feel, like I could tell that I was starting to go through transition. Like I was getting like hot and then cold and then hot, and I was shaking and like, you know what I mean? I could tell. And I remember having that thought in the moment, which was like both scary and very cool. And then a little later, I remember telling my doula, I was like, Megan, I'm pushing. My doula is also Megan. Yeah. Which again, I thought was so cool. I was so excited. And you know, I didn't have an epidural at this point, so I was really proud of myself for like getting to that. And so I did push unmedicated for, I think, like an hour and a half is what my husband estimated at, which I think it's very cool that my midwife just like let my body do what it was supposed to do. And she had told me before and definitely followed through on this. Like I could push however I wanted. Like I was standing up beside the bed. She was just like behind me. So, which is so cool because I'm in Alabama and I'm in a hospital, you know, that I don't know that that's super common here, but she's great. And she like suggested a few positional changes and nothing really seemed to be changing. And I could tell after a while, nobody said anything and I didn't ever say anything out loud, but I could tell that like there was a reason that like nothing was happening. So then my midwife suggested I get on the bed and she checked me. And as soon as she said that, I was like, okay, something's wrong. And it turned out I was only a 7. Yeah.
Wait, did you swell or did it seem like you were, because they didn't really check you, right? So they were just letting you go.
Yep. Okay. Which I feel like on the one hand, I think is very cool that she was just letting my body do it. On the other hand, that could have been bad, right? Like, because what if I had swelled, then would have that just been a C-section? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But on the bright side, the swelling was not an issue, luckily.
Yes.
Yeah. So I will say moving to the bed like made the pain unbearable. And I wonder if it would have gotten to that point anyways, because I think, and I feel like I may have heard this before, and this might just be something I'm thinking, but maybe my body pushing preemptively like was positional. Okay, cool. I was like, usually, why did I think that?
Usually if our body is wanting to push before our cervix is not quite dilated, it can be a positional thing where there's more pressure on one. And so it's like, oh, it's time. And so our body's just like, ooh, pushing, but then the pressure's not equal and we're not dilating all the way. So gotcha. That can definitely be positional, can be a thing.
And then sometimes it may not be a positional thing. It just happens. And our body's just intuitively like wanting to push, but our cervix isn't ready. But usually it's positional. Yeah.
Gotcha. And after I got the epidural, like, and she checked baby's position, like that there, I don't remember where she was, but it wasn't optimal. Mm-hmm. I know that. So it could have very well been that. So, mm-hmm. but the pain was unbearable. And hence me asking for an, actually my midwife suggested getting an epidural. And this was like after, I don't know how long it was, but it felt like forever. And I feel like this is a shameful part too, which I don't feel like I hear a lot of people talk about, but actually you guys posted something like last week about like, for all the people that are like having a calm birth, there's people roaring and it's like,
yes,
oh, man, I felt so seen because I was like begging for like the pain to stop. And I told my doula later, I was like, I'm embarrassed by that. And she, of course, really? Is like, no, don't be.
Yeah, no.
But it, and then it's like, well, do I just have a low pain tolerance? Like, can I just not handle it? Like, I, you know, there's just a lot of things that go through your mind about that. But I did get an epidural after my midwife suggested it, which yeah, I will say I had already been like begging for one in my head. I just hadn't said it out loud. So wasn't bummed that she suggested it at all. And, you know, when you're getting the epidural, the anesthesiologist said, okay, you've had one before. Were there any issues with it? And I was like, no. And my midwife was like, well, didn't the last one fail? And I was like, oh yeah. So luckily she had the thought to say that because I didn't put that together, but basically the same thing ended up happening. So got the epidural. It worked totally fine at first, just like last time. Took a nap. Used the peanut ball and woke up and I was complete, which was very exciting. I think they redosed the epidural once in like the middle of that nap because I started feeling my contractions through it, like, and it got to like a painful point. Mm-hmm. And then again, right before we started pushing, they dosed it again because the same thing had happened. And they said, okay, well, if that happens again, we may have to like replace it, which obviously like I didn't. Not
yeah
no
but you were getting was it like breakthrough pain or was it like temporary relief coming and then it coming back in?
I got the relief initially and then just slowly I started feeling the contractions again, they would be light and then they would keep getting worse and worse and worse, and it happened both times. I don't know why. Very interesting. But I will say it worked pretty well because I did not feel the delivery. So it obviously went pretty well. So I think I pushed for, as was said again, like an hour and a half. I don't know how real those timelines are because I don't remember. And, you know, the pushing was totally fine. I haven't had an epidural, so it wasn't really that intense for me. We tried a few different positions. I did like they had a squat bar and I was like half sitting up, you know. I don't know what that's called, but
yeah, they do. It's like a squat essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Assisted basically. Yeah. And I thought that was great. And then after a while, my midwife came in and I don't remember if I had like a low grade fever at that point or not, but I feel like yes. Otherwise, why would I be thinking that? But Mary's heart rate was high and like had been, I guess.
Which would make sense with a fever. Yeah, that would make sense with a fever. If you've got a fever in place, sometimes babies' heart rates get tacky, or like what you're just saying, tachycardia. And it's just a sign of infection or fever, or baby's feeling it inside.
Gotcha. So yeah, she came in and said she was going to get the OB talk about either a vacuum delivery or a C-section. And she just wanted to see what the OB thought before. Like about a vacuum before we like move forward with anything. And after she said that, I think I turned to, it was either my husband or the doula, I don't remember. And I said, I don't think I want a vacuum because I knew what could come with that as like bad tears, you know? And I was like, that sounds terrible. But the OB came in and it was all very fast. She's explained like, I'm going to check you to see like if I think we can use the vacuum or if not, we're going to have to go for a C-section. And she said, and if not, it's going to have to be pretty quick. And she said, you know, same with the vacuum. If we try and it comes off too many times or whatever, like, we're going for a C-section and it'll be quick. And I was like, oh, so we're serious here. Like, this is real. But after checking me, she said, I'm 90% sure we can do this with a vacuum. And it just all happened so fast. Because I know I had said, I don't know that I want a vacuum. But when she said 90%, I was like, okay, let's do it. Like,
gave you some confidence.
Yes. And I will even say, like, after I had the epidural, and, you know, you're a little bit loopy at that point, I was talking to my doula and I said, man, I almost just want a C-section right now. Like, I'm done. And now, of course, I'm so glad that she, like, didn't believe me. So we tried with the vacuum, and so tons of people came in really quickly because obviously, like, we're delivering a baby right now, or we're going for a C-section, either or. And I will say it was very, very cool. All of a sudden, it was very quick, and people are directing you to push. But the whole room was also like a bunch of women, like, cheering you on. It was very cool. Even though, like, that was not what I wanted at all, it was still a very cool moment. And so she was delivered with the vacuum. And my doula took pictures. I have pretty cool pictures of that. They're pretty graphic, but I have them. And, you know, she came up immediately on my chest, and my husband got to cut the cord, and all of those things that we didn't get last time, we got. And it was very surreal.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Especially with it happening so fast.
It was. And man, part of why I wanted a VBAC so bad is everybody talks about that high and like how happy you are. And it took me almost a month to bond with my first daughter, which I knew it was a possibility. And I don't think I was bummed about it then, but now I find that it's so sad. And of course, like, I knew it, just because you have a VBAC doesn't mean you're going to immediately bond with your baby, but I did get that, and it was immediate, and it was all so, I was absolutely like on a birth high. It was just so phenomenal. I could not stop smiling. I like hugged the OB, like, I think I said at one point, like, the whole office is getting banana bread. They got cookies. They did not get banana bread, but I did bake them cookies. Yeah, it was really happy. Really happy.
Yeah. Oh,
Go ahead.
It's so important to have those moments, you know, and like you said, like, it doesn't always mean if you have this VBAC, it's going to be this exact moment. Like, you can still have those moments with C-sections or planned or unplanned, right? But to have that moment is just, it's incredible. And it is so, it's special. It's very special. Like, I almost don't have a word for it. Like, it's just so special.
Yeah. It's very hard to describe, but I did tear from using the vacuum. Like I said, on the bright side, from the epidural, didn't feel that at all, which I think is great. I did end up with a third degree tear. So there was, I think, like a good like 45 minutes of stitching, but I was in the bed holding my baby. I didn't care at all. And I also didn't feel it. So that's a nice bonus. I also lost a decent amount of blood.
Oh.
I don't know the units. I remember the number. It's like 1100, I think, or 1300. I think like 1500 they said was hemorrhaging. And I think I lost 1300 again.
Yeah, it's pretty decent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I didn't feel like initially, but then like when I went to stand up the first time, obviously with help, but I was like, I'm going to pass out.
You could tell.
And then it happened one more time. And so the next day while recovering, I got like a round or two of magnesium for the preeclampsia, which, again, I'm just thankful I didn't have to do during labor, because that sounds worse. Then I also got blood. Is that a blood transfusion if they give you? Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
yep. Did blood transfusion.
Yeah. So we also did that the next day. And I will say once I was off some magnesium and got the blood, I felt way better.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
But other than that, she has been a dream. Breastfeeding has been so easy. Good. Like no issues whatsoever. She only sleeps if she's laying on me, but you know, all the cuddles.
She's also 7 weeks old, right?
Yeah, she's literally sleeping on me right now. But,
so precious.
Yeah, that's wow. My story. And it was hard, but great. And I hope it goes differently next time, but I'm still so glad and really thankful for how it did go.
Yeah, I'm so happy. And I'm happy that you had the team and the support. And even when you had to switch team members to have an OB do an assisted delivery, like that they were supportive of you and you felt that overwhelming, you know, cheer and boost in the room to help get you through that and get your baby on your chest.
Yeah.
Oh, huge congratulations. And thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.